minutes or whatever it might take to discuss your recent visit, I hope, to Vietnam and let us know what you found.
Congresswoman Sanchez, members of the Human Rights Caucus, thank you for holding this hearing and inviting us to testify. The U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom sent a delegation to Vietnam October 23rd through November 2nd of this year, and we are pleased to have this opportunity to share with you some of our observations. Vietnam's overall human rights record remains very poor and has deteriorated in the last year. The government of Vietnam has moved decisively to repress challenges to its authority. Dozens of legal and political reform advocates, free speech activists, labor unionists, and independent religious leaders and religious freedom advocates have been arrested, placed under home detention or surveillance, threatened, intimidated, and harassed. These are serious problems that complicate United States-Vietnamese relations. We believe it is in the long-term interests of both countries to pursue a relationship built on both prosperity and the rule of law, religious freedom, and related human rights, which President Bush called the non-negotiable demands of human liberty. Religious freedom conditions in Vietnam, to be sure, have improved since 2004. The government of Vietnam engaged itself to take measures to improve religious freedom concerns and legal issues and release selected prisoners. There has been noticeable progress. But the Commission remains skeptical of current conditions, particularly in the context of Vietnam's recent repression of peaceful political and religious dissent. There remain serious and systematic problems that darken the religious freedom picture. And let me briefly sketch out three areas of concerns. First, it is clear that in some areas of the country, provincial authorities are using their authority to restrict and abuse religious freedom. Central government authorities either ignore these problems or have not yet done enough to curtail them. In Dak Lak province, we met with one house church Protestant pastor who told us how government authorities had threatened to remove his residency permit, brought lawsuits against him to confiscate his property, harassed and threatened his congregation until many of them left, and then put a sign up at the end of the road prohibiting entrance to a, quote, secret military area. He said that 14 other congregations affiliated with him had experienced similar problems. Now, Vietnam requires all religious groups to apply for legal recognition. Many hundreds of applications for legal recognition are either ignored or denied, leaving the congregations vulnerable and technically illegal. One Protestant pastor told us that after his application was denied, police harassment increased. He was interrogated and briefly detained. There are other issues in the provinces that are serious and require immediate attention from officials in Hanoi. In the Central Highlands and Central Coast, local officials have confiscated the land of ethnic minority Protestants. In the Central Highlands, provincial officials have been trained to deny medical, educational, financial, and other government services to religious families, or to deny them to the families of recent converts. And in the most serious recent case, police in Fujian province severely beat a young Protestant man who refused to renounce his faith. His name, as you know, is Y Het. Provincial officials reportedly forced this man, injured and illiterate, to put his thumbprint on a document saying that he was beaten in a drunken brawl. Y Het died of internal injuries received in police custody on March 23, 2007. The commission met with religious affairs and public security officials in Hanoi. They assured us that problems in the provinces do not reflect central government policy. We pressed officials in Hanoi to train and, as needed, punish local and provincial officials who restricted or abused religious freedom. We fully expect them to address problems in the provincial areas as they promised. But we are waiting, we are taking a wait-and-see attitude rather than to declare that the glass is half or three-quarters full. The second area of concern regards the Vietnamese government's harassment and detentions of members of religious groups that seek independence or autonomy from government control. This is particularly true of the Unified Buddhist Church of Vietnam, the UBCV, some Hoa Hao and Cao Dai groups, as well as Khmer Buddhists. During our trip, we met with the Venerable Thich Quang Do and other leaders of UBCV. UBCV leaders are detained under pagoda arrest orders. And I might add here, by the way, that their two most important leaders are under pagoda arrest. And so the idea that the government somehow is quite tolerant of a religion would be odd if your two most senior and eminent clerics are under pagoda arrest. Monks and nuns who seek advice from recognized UBCV leaders are harassed or publicly denounced. Youth, family, and charitable activities of the UBCV are actively banned. The UBCV, along with some Wahao and Kaodai Buddhist groups, want to organize independently of government-approved Buddhist religious organizations. They want to worship without harassment. They want to choose and educate their own leaders, and they want to carry out humanitarian and charitable works. The Vietnamese government rightly recognizes differences among Protestant denominations and allows them to organize and carry out legal operations, but among the Buddhists, peaceful demands for independence are treated as a threat to government control. In addition, peaceful expression of views or demonstrations for greater religious freedom and the legal and political reforms needed to ensure it are treated as a challenge to the government's authority. This is the reason why in October, Vietnamese President Tri threatened publicly that he would arrest the Venerable Thich Quang Do. The reason why 12 other UBCV leaders remain under some form of pagoda detention, and why up to 12 Woha have been arrested in recent years, including 4 last year for staging a peaceful hunger strike protesting past previous arrests. It's why 5 Cao Dai remain in prison for distributing pamphlets critical of the Vietnamese government's restrictions on some Cao Dai activities, and why 5 Khmer Buddhist monks are in prison for organizing peaceful demonstrations to protest restrictions on ordination and language training in the Sok Trang province. These actions are indefensible. The government of Vietnam cannot repress religious freedom because it fears a loss of authority. The limits are set out in Article 18 of the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, which Vietnam has ratified. And third and last, the State Department 2007 IRF report claims that there are no longer any prisoners of concern. That is what the State Department considers as religious prisoners in Vietnam. Such a statement fails to take into consideration the prisoners mentioned above. It also does not take into account those who, motivated by their religion and conscience, express views or organize in support of legal or political reforms required to ensure religious freedom, or those who monitor freedom of religion and have been punished for that, or those who circulate their findings. Prisoners such as Father Lai, Nguyen Van Dai, and Li Thi Cong Nan, for example, were charged under vague national security laws for the peaceful expression of universally guaranteed rights to freedom of association, speech, assembly, and the freedom of thought, conscience, and religion. The U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom concludes that all 3 should be prisoners of concern when the State Department makes CPC status determination. The State Department CPC decisions are currently pending. An announcement on them will probably be made in the next several months. The Commission urges the Department of State to seek the immediate and unconditional release of these 3 prisoners. We were allowed to meet Dai and Cong Nan in prison outside Hanoi. After examining the cases of these 2 courageous individuals, we conclude that they were imprisoned for exercising universally guaranteed rights and freedoms. Lawyer Dai seems to have been targeted specifically for his advocacy and reporting on religious freedom conditions. We were gravely disappointed that the recent appeals court decision in Vietnam did not reverse their sentences and release them from prison. We believe that peaceful monitoring of and advocacy for political reform, religious freedom, and other human rights strengthens rather than threatens the Vietnamese state. This is essential for religious freedom protections to fully take root. The Commission, Congresswoman, looks forward to meeting with you and all members of the Congressional Human Rights Caucus to share our perspective and recommendations for improving religious freedom and related human rights in Vietnam. I have a more full written statement that we can submit, and I would be happy to take any questions that you may have.
Well, we will take your written statement in for the record, and we do have your latest report on your trip to Vietnam. I have a concern because I just had the ambassador before in this briefing, and he seemed to think that aside from, for example, aside from the Venerable Thich Quang Do and some of the other leadership of the Unified Buddhist Church, that, you know, even though they weren't certified by the state or registered with the state, that people seem to, in that sect, seem to be able to go about and do their business. What do you say to that, Commissioner?
First of all, there is no religious freedom if there is control. What Vietnam essentially has done, it is begrudgingly allowed religious worship, but it has built a very large fence around it in an effort to ensure that it doesn't grow and in an effort to make sure that that the religions that are present in Vietnam are doing things that the government wants them to do. With regard to the UBCV, you have some very serious problems because, first of all, the government has not allowed the UBCV to build out and operate its youth movement. And so how is this religion supposed to prosper well into the future if it can't engage in the kind of evangelization and outreach that all religions engage in order to maintain their success and their vitality into the future? Secondly, all religions at some level engage in efforts to reduce human suffering and human misery as a part of their ministry, as a part of their vocation. And of course, the UBCV has as a central feature of its religion outreach to the community to reduce the kind of human misery and human suffering you would see from civil rights violations or political oppression. So to the extent the government views that kind of humanitarian assistance as a non-religious form of protest or activity that they can punish and use as grounds for imprisonment, they are greatly restricting the religious freedom of the UBCV or any other religion that wants to engage in the kind of humanitarian aid or the kind of outreach that all of us understand as people of faith and that we enjoy here in America. And so I think that there are very, we believe there are very serious problems regarding the UBCV, as well as, frankly, other religions right now in Vietnam. It's not to say that some improvement hasn't been made. There have been registrations, more people are worshiping, but there are very serious problems, and we do not believe that those are isolated. They are, in our view, egregious, and they are, in our view, systematic.
Commissioner, I am a person of faith. I happen to be Catholic, and I also happen to be an American. And as you know, being brought up in the education system of America, one of the first things you learn is the way that the Europeans settled the eastern side of the United States, at least, and that would be that many people came because of oppression with respect to religious beliefs or inability to practice in the manner in which they wanted to in the European countries. And so this is sort of a tenet of being an American, is that, you know, we worship if we want to, we worship how we want to, and aside from, you know, running in once in a while from a church from the perspective of the IRS or something, respect to taxes and stuff, then the reality is that almost anybody can open up a church almost any place. So why is the government of Vietnam so restrictive? Is it because you believe that it really wants to limit the amount of religion, organized religion, if you will, within its people? Why are they so restrictive with respect to registering?
That's a good question. I think at some level, it's inherent in a serious embrace of communism, because if you want to have a regime that has a chokehold on all forms of expression and political activity, it's very hard to create space for groups that you can't control and for groups that are going to be suspicious of or skeptical of government activities that oppress people or cause misery or suffering. And so there is probably inherent in a strong communist government, a real aversion to religions that would be entirely free. And so while I think as a matter of some peaceful coexistence they allow religious worship, they want to make sure it's controlled in ways that don't threaten their chokehold on expression and political activity within their own country. And so I think that is a serious problem. It's a question of control. And when we spoke to the Archbishop in Hanoi, he said that is the nub of the problem, that there is control. And with too much control, you can't have real religious freedom. And so imagine a world where you go to a church and policemen walk around taking photographs of people who are there. Imagine a world where your pastor can't go to get training in Ho Chi Minh City from the Central Highlands because he's denied that opportunity. Imagine a world where government officials that don't like a particular pastor come in and seek to create enmity amongst churchgoers so that they can split them off and move as many of the congregants as possible into a government-recognized church. These are the kinds of things that happen. Or imagine if, as a practicing Catholic, your children were denied the opportunity to attend a public boarding school because of your religion or your ethnicity. That's what's happening in Vietnam. And the government is very good at trying to obfuscate the systematic nature of this activity by playing an elaborate shell game, where they claim at one level it's not the central government's responsibility, or it's not the central government demanding that these forms of oppression take place. But then you go to the provincial government or the local government, and they're all pointing fingers at various levels to the Vietnam government. That kind of shell game was precisely what the Ordinance on Religion was meant to stop, so that there could be accountability, transparency, greater religious freedom, and a greater opportunity to invoke a process by which you could meaningfully obtain that space, that free and open space to practice and worship. And Vietnam is simply not there yet. Simply not there yet.
I too had the opportunity a few years ago to meet with the Archbishop, and he said that, you know, one of the laments that he had with respect to what was going on and what the government there did was that they did not allow him to, going back to this piece of the good works, at least that's what we call it within the Catholic faith, the good works, or you know, helping those who are in poverty, who have nothing to eat, who don't have shelter over their head, etc. He said that he was not even able to put in, for example, a school in the rural areas where no education is offered. There are no schools in some of these areas, and there are children that are illiterate. You know, one of the things that the Catholic faith, and I'm sure many other faiths do, is to, where they see a need, put forward something like a school or training. He said he was not allowed to do that. And his issue was that, you know, the government, if there was something that would be a good, that would be a positive good, like education, but the government was not able to deliver that, they still wouldn't let anybody like a religious affiliation deliver that, because the only good things in the system come from the government. So my question to you is, when you went, because I haven't been able to, every time I've gone to Vietnam, you know, I've got 25 people on me, watching every move I make, and, you know, one time that I was denied a visa because I refused to be under hotel arrest, as I call it, because you know, they don't like me to move freely. And I have not been able to do anything but go to Hanoi and to Saigon when I have been there. When you visited in the rural area, were these needs apparent? Did you hear from religious leaders that they are denied the ability to do the good works be it education or feeding the poor or information and training with respect to helping them get a better crop or any of that? Were you able to go out and see any of this, and what was your impression?
Couple of observations. First, you mentioned the Catholic Church initially, so let me address that. The Catholic Church often operates AIDS, HIV clinics, or preschool education, or kitchens and whatnot, but you know, they don't do it with explicit permission. And my suspicion is that the Catholic Church in Vietnam can get away with that. You know, they can probably press the envelope a little bit, particularly in the cities. So even though they don't have explicit permission to run these operations, they do it, and no one's going to go after them. Out in the rural areas, Congresswoman, the poverty and need for alleviation of suffering is just absolutely stark. You know, the problem, of course, is that if you are denied registration, right, as a church, you know, you're really not operating in a very safe way. And so your activities are going to, by and large, be confined to worship. Because the minute you step out of that space, out of that house church, you are risking, at a minimum, harassment and intimidation. And in the case of the Buddhists, quite often, my observation was that when they're out trying to relieve human suffering and misery, the government views their activity as political. And so any humanitarian aid they seek to extend could be construed as an effort to undercut the legitimacy of the government. And so they face real risk, and they're obviously hampered in their efforts. And then, of course, there are the obvious institutional constraints. If you're under pagoda arrest, you're not going to be out there feeding the poor. If you can't organize a youth movement that can engage in the kind of vibrant outreach that a religion needs, how are you going to meet the needs of thousands and thousands of poor people in the Mekong Delta or in the Central Highlands? You can't. You absolutely can't. And so I think you've hit upon something that is extremely important. There are some who say, gee, how can we deal with religious freedom if people can't have bread on their table? Well, I think human history shows that one of the greatest providers of sustenance, physical and temporal sustenance, has been religion, churches, people of faith who want to engage in charity. So I would say if you want to improve the human condition in Vietnam economically as well as spiritually, the answer is to give religion some space and to let it do what it does best, which is to meet both the spiritual and temporal needs of the people of that country.
I would agree with you on that. I mean, we really saw, even in a place like the United States and the whole issue of Katrina, that it was really our faith groups who got on the ground and were able to move so much of that provision and other issues that we had with that. You know, and I'm going to ask in a written request to the ambassador who just testified before you. He seemed to indicate that there really were, that most of the religious prisoners had been let out of prisons, and that there really wasn't that much of a concern with respect to people. How many religious political prisoners? How many religious prisoners do you think are behind in confinement, either in prison or within their pagodas at this point in Vietnam?
Well, first of all, you're aware, I'm sure, that in 2001 and 2004, there were very significant numbers of arrests of Montagnards.
Yes.
And it is still very much an open question how many of those people remain in prison. The ambassador knows. It would be wonderful for us to know. we're trying to find out. When we were in the Central Highlands, we engaged in very intense discussions with the provincial government and demanded that they work with us in identifying the Montagnard prisoners who remained. Now, they steadfastly maintained that if there were people in prison, they weren't there for religious reasons. And we maintained that the best way to solve this problem and the best way to figure this out would be to exchange lists, that to the extent we have names of people, we would like corroboration as to whether or not they're in prison. And if we don't have some names of other people who are in prison, we'd like the government to supply them. And so that is the dialogue that we're engaged in now. And I suspect you and your colleagues on the caucus could be very helpful to us in finally trying to get a handle on how many Montagnard prisoners there are, because it could be as many as 50 or 100. With what intelligence we've been able to gather to date. In terms of other religious who are imprisoned, you might be familiar with the Buddhists in Sauk Trong. There are 5 that are in prison for a traffic incident, a minor traffic incident, so they say, but. We pressed them hard on that issue, and we asked the provincial authorities to approach those who have the authority to grant amnesty to make that recommendation and that demand, so that those 5 Buddhists could be released. Of course, you're aware that there are, I believe, 12, at least 12 other UBCB under house arrest. There are several Catholic priests. There is, of course, the lawyer Dai, who is in prison. Now, the State Department and the Commission appear to have different perspectives on what it means to be a religious prisoner. The State Department's view seems to be that if you're arrested for praying or worshiping and you're in prison, you're a religious prisoner. But if you're imprisoned for practicing your faith, engaging in your ministry or your vocation, by taking your religious ideals and applying them, well, that's not a prisoner of concern. I find that dividing line pretty hard to stomach. And I think that as an initial matter, there needs to be a serious look back at what standards we use to ascertain whether someone is a prisoner of concern, because we believe there are plenty of them in Vietnam right now, and that something needs to be done about it on fairly short order.
And lastly, let me ask you, Commissioner, what do you think the Congress can do to help in the push at this government, this Vietnamese government, to open up the religious freedoms for its people?
Well, for starters, I think we're at a unique moment. Vietnam very much wants to become a more important player on the world stage. As you know, it now has status on the Security Council. It has WTO accession. I believe there's another action or two that Congress will be considering soon with regard to Vietnam. If you ever have the opportunity to go to Ho Chi Minh City again sometime in the future, you will see it's a positively booming economy, if they let you out of your hotel room. An absolutely booming economy. They've established exchanges, stock exchanges. This is a country that wants to become a player on the world stage. And so now is the time to leverage the influence we have to move religious freedom forward.
And how do we do that?
Well,
we have the Human Rights Act of Vietnam in the 2007 before the Senate, and obviously we're trying to figure out how we push that.
Well, the administration is engaged in ongoing bilateral discussions with the Vietnamese government right now on a variety of different fronts. I think having them continue to specify deliverables in the religious freedom area at each turn. So when there are trade discussions, for example, we should, consistent with what the president said when he went to Vietnam, they should lay on the table, a series of things that the Vietnamese government, needs to do, or things they ought to try to satisfy. So I think in every bilateral discussion, particularly in the trade arena, there ought to be some specific things that that are asked for. And I think in the case of Vietnam, it needs to be spelled out pretty clearly. So if there are particular prisoners you want released, or particular schools that you want created or opened up and non-discriminatory, those things need to be specified, along with, I think, demands that there be explicit training by the central government of provincial and local leaders to make sure oppression is not happening, and also a more careful recitation of what process exists to protect people. Also, I think there are some opportunities to incentivize Vietnam. So, for example, you have Pearl involving do rule of law activity, which would relate to religious liberty. There is a development fund, the Montagnard Development Fund, which you can use as a means of providing aid and assistance to the ethnic minorities in the Central Highlands, and I think you could even extend it to ethnic minorities in the Sóc Trăng province, the Mekong Delta. There seems to be some confusion about where those funds are, whether they're available, but our sense from our trip, having talked to provincial leaders in the Central Highlands and in Sóc Trăng, is that there'd be a lot of interest in getting that development money, and that if there were a way of working with them and making sure that those funds were given to the ethnic minority groups that are firmly ensconced in these various religious activities and churches, that I think would go a long way toward helping those people in a meaningful way. For example, in Sóc Trăng, using some of these funding mechanisms to help with the creation of poly-language schools. That's something that would probably be very useful. So you have at your disposal some funding. You have some assistance relating to the provision of rule of law activity. You have bilateral commerce and trade negotiations, which are ongoing between the United States and Vietnam, where you can say, well, look, the president has given us authority to tie human rights and religious freedom specifically into these discussions. Here are things that we really want to see happen. And so those are some specific things, wholly separate and apart from a CPC designation, which is, we're in the throes of hashing out after our trip. We have our May 2007 recommendation where we felt, the elimination was premature, and now we're in the throes of working through our recommendations for May of next year.
Thank you for your time, Commissioner.
Thank you very much.
Give you an entirety of your report.
Thank you for your leadership on this issue.